Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you weren't planning on funding your Christmas purchases with crypto from Terraform Labs. Do Kwon, he's the South Korean cryptocurrency entrepreneur behind Terra, SD, and Luna currencies. They lost an estimated $40 billion. He was sentenced this week to 15 years in prison for what a judge called an epic fraud. You don't want to finance your Christmas purchases with an epic fraud, do you? He pleaded guilty and admitted to misleading investors about a coin that was supposed to maintain a steady price during periods of crypto market volatility. He's one of several cryptocurrency moguls facing federal charges after that slump in digital token prices in 2022 that led to a collapse of a number of companies. But hey, it's not 2022 anymore. The judge, Paul Engelmeyer, sharply rebuked Kwon for repeatedly lying to everyday investors who trusted him with their life savings. Quote, this was a fraud on an epic generational scale. In the history of federal prosecutions, there are few frauds that have caused as much harm as you have, Mr. Kwon. Kwon addressed the court and apologized to his victims, including the hundreds who submitted letters to the court describing the harm they'd suffered. Quote, all their stories were harrowing and reminded me again of the great losses that I've caused. I want to tell those victims that I'm sorry, unquote. Kwon didn't offer them the money back. But hey, there is good news this week. I know, out of character for me to point that out. But we're just days away from the time when the nights start getting shorter and the days start getting longer. Our long national darkmare is almost over. Hello, welcome to the show. New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this right here, this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
is AI a bubble that would be trouble? Messier than stubble. Anything but delicious. It might be bubblicious.
AI singing of its own possible bubblement. Bubble talk is everywhere, according to Axios. Mentions of AI bubble rose 880% since last quarter's investment calls. If the AI boom turns out to be a bubble, this energy gusher could dry up just as fast as it has opened, Axios says, risking billions of dollars of stranded assets. Are your assets stranded? Mine aren't. Along that topic, Oracle shares sank 13% this week, sparking a tech sell-off. The company's massive spending and weak forecasts fanned doubts, according to Reuters, over how quickly the big bets on AI will pay off. Investors have dumped Oracle bonds on worries about its debt-fueled AI build out while piling into credit default swaps that offer bondholders a hedge against default. You remember those? They worked so well in 2008. Big tech's rising appetite for debt, says Reuters, has marked a departure for the companies that long depended on strong cash flows to fund spending. Tech executives have said the outlays are necessary for a technology that's going to transform work and make businesses more efficient. Oracle has burned around $10 billion in cash the first half of this fiscal year due to the AI investments. It's set to lose more than $90 billion in market value if the losses persist. For Larry Ellison, whose family is behind Paramount's attempt to take over Warner Brothers, the net worth hit could total more than $30 billion. Send your cards and letters to Larry, won't you? Microsoft has lowered sales growth targets for its AI agent after many salespeople missed their quotas in the fiscal year ending in June, according to a report this week from The Information. The adjustment is reportedly unusual for Microsoft, comes after the company missed a number of ambitious sales goals for its AI offerings. AI agents, I know, we in the business don't really need AI agents. We have living ones. But no, these are specialized implementations of AI language models designed to perform multiple tasks, multi-step tasks, too, autonomously rather than simply responding to single prompts. Those features have been central to Microsoft's sales pitch this year. The company declared it has entered the era of AI agents. They cost more than 10%, I bet. The company has promised customers agents could automate complex tasks. But as the year draws to a close, that promise has proven harder to deliver than the company expected. Less than a fifth of salespeople in one unit reported meeting their sales growth targets. The figures suggest enterprises aren't yet ready to pay premium prices for their AI agent tools. Google plans to add a second Gemini-based model to Chrome. This will address the security problems created by adding the first Gemini model to Chrome. AI to fix AI. Last September, Google added a Gemini-powered chat window to its browser and promised the software would soon gain agentic capabilities. your agents, that allow it to interact with browser controls and other tools in response to a prompt, allowing error-prone AI models to browse the web without human intervention is dangerous, says the British tech journal The Register, because the software can ingest content, perhaps from a maliciously crafted web page, that instructs it to ignore safety guardrails. That's known as indirect prompt injection. No, that can't lead to injection site sensitivity or irritation. Google knows about the risks posed by indirect prompt injection. This week, Chrome security engineer rated it as the primary new threat facing all agentic browsers. Yeah, now that's a word. It can appear in malicious sites, he said, third-party content, or from user-generated content like user reviews, and can cause the agent to take unwanted actions, such as initiating financial transactions or sending out sensitive data. The seriousness of the threat recently led the consultant firm Gartner to recommend that companies block all AI browsers. Google, having invested billions in AI stuff, prefers people embrace it rather than shun it, so it's adding a second model to keep the Gemini-based agent in line. It's called a user alignment critic. Google designed the critic so that attackers cannot poison it by exposing the model to malicious content. Enlisting one machine learning model to moderate another has become an accepted pattern among AI firms. Already, we talked earlier this year, about the fact that AI firms were running out of... They'd already slurped up the entire internet, running out of data to train their models. We're now using AI-created data to train AI models. Yeah, it's getting a little, what would the word be, onanistic? Police body cameras equipped with artificial intelligence have been trained to detect the faces of about 7,000 people on a high-risk watch list in Edmonton, Canada. This is a live test of whether facial recognition technology, shunned as too intrusive by more cautious police forces, could have a place in policing throughout North America. What's the matter with Mexico? But 6 years after leading body camera maker Axon said police use of facial recognition tech posed serious ethical concerns, this pilot project, which began last week, is raising alarms far beyond Edmonton, according to the AP. Former chair of Axon's AI ethics board led the company to temporarily abandon facial recognition 6 years ago. Now he says he's concerned the Arizona-based company is moving forward without enough public debate, testing, and expert vetting about the societal risks and privacy implications. Privacy? It's essential not to use these technologies, which have very real costs and risks, unless there's some clear indication of the benefits, said Barry Friedman, now a law professor at New York University. The founder of Axon, Rick Smith, contends that the Edmonton pilot is not a product launch, but just an early-stage field research project that will assist and assess how the technology performs and reveals the safeguards that are needed for it to perform responsibly. That would be nice. You'd be responsible now. By testing in the real-world conditions outside the U.S., he says, we can gather independent insights, strengthen oversight frameworks, and apply those learnings to future evaluations, including within the United States, he says. So test it in Canada, and then when we've... Yeah. The senior vice president of devices and services at Amazon says the new AI-powered Alexa Plus, which can integrate with other devices like Ring security cameras, aims to ease the constant mental load in a household. remembering whether the pets ate restaurants each family member pitched and saw vetoed, and regular grocery orders. The idea is to have ambient artificial intelligence around your house so that devices can assist in tasks, chores, and other household command center issues. This is reported by Fortune. The new Alexa Plus is much more conversational. You no longer have to pronounce everything perfectly. I said perfectly and discreetly in order for it to understand you. She's the best DJ on the planet, in my opinion, says the senior vice president of devices and services at Amazon, Mr. Panay. You have a personal shopper, you have a butler, you have a personal assistant, you have your home manager, he says. Different people use Alexa for different things, and now she's pretty much supercharged. The product is being released this week to anyone with an Echo device, so be careful. The business monetization model, this is Amazon after all, involves flywheels from Amazon's $2.5 trillion retail ecosystem, particularly around shopping for clothes, groceries, and the like. So if you want Alexa to tell you or to actually do your buying for you, you know where it's going to shop. Alexa knows what you're doing and ultimately can just order ahead of time for you moving forward, says Panay. Ultimately, he envisions users wanting your assistant everywhere you go because, quote, the more it understands about you, the more informed it is, the better it can serve your needs. Unless it's a bubble. News of AI. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time to unrelax. It's Miller time.
Welcome to Miller time. It's all yours.
Stephen Miller, that is, our curator and captain of cruelty, is this immigration policy and its related crime policy moves on. Immigrants approved to be naturalized went to Faneuil Hall in Boston this week for that long-awaited moment to pledge allegiance to the United States. Instead, as they lined up, some were told by U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services officials they couldn't proceed due to their countries of origin. It's from WGBH in Boston. The same situation is playing out at naturalization events across the country as the Citizenship and Immigration Services directs its employees to halt adjudicating all immigration pathways for people from 19 countries, you know, the S-hole countries, deemed to be high risk. Quote, one of our clients said she'd gone to her oath ceremony because she hadn't received the cancellation notice in time, said Executive Director of Project Citizenship. Quote, she showed up as we scheduled, and when she arrived, officers were asking everyone what country they came from. And if they said a certain country, they were told to step out of line and that their oath ceremonies were canceled. Unquote. That particular woman, a Haitian woman in her 50s, has had a green card since the early 2000s. Quote, people are devastated and they're frightened, says the executive director of Project Citizenship. People were plucked out of line. They didn't cancel the whole ceremony. She says many clients with upcoming ceremonies and appointments have received cancellations via an online portal. The notices provide no further guidance or instructions. As people made their that's Boston, as people made their way into the Indianapolis Union Station this week for a naturalization ceremony, according to the Indianapolis Star, federal officials stopped certain applicants, telling them they wouldn't be leaving the building with citizenship. I said citizenship. The immigrants who'd already passed every step in the long naturalization processes only needed to take the oath of allegiance. But a federal directive handed down by that same Immigration and Customs Services at the beginning of this month, made that impossible for more than one-third of the people signed up for the Indianapolis ceremony. An official of that service present at the event, Zhibu Zhao, yeah, that sounds like an American name, said oaths of allegiance for 38 of the 100 participants were canceled. Travel bans and restrictions have been in place for 19 countries since June, many of them in Africa. But this week, or actually last week now, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services announced the agency would immediately halt applications and asylum claims of people from those countries. Yeah, high risk. Zhao said the 38 people were notified 2 weeks ago that their citizenship ceremonies had been canceled. The agency didn't announce plans to pause certain citizenship applications until 2nd of this month. He doesn't know if these people now face deportation when asked if many of their naturalization oaths would be rescheduled. He said, quote, "That is up to whoever's in charge in Washington," unquote. I take that to be a sidelong glance at Stephen Miller, the aforementioned Stephen Miller. He is known to be responsible for the immigration policy and its execution. Word chosen deliberately. We know that these forces that are enforcing that policy are not meeting the quotas, the numerical quotas for arrests and deportations established by Miller. You don't see him a lot on TV. A friend of mine who produces a TV news show says requests for him to appear on anything except Fox News are being rejected. So he's kind of a mystery. Except when you listen to the latest from the Stephen Miller Band.
Thank you. your throne and leave your body alone. Somebody must change, and you are the reason I've wasted all these years. And somebody holds the key, because I'm tired of I just ain't got the time, because I'm wasted and I can't find my way home. It's been all over the world. I'm looking at
Occupied New Orleans. This is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
we've got the ultra modern knack of getting oil from the deepest crack. So give the boys just a bit of slack and say a hearty what the frack.
Well, we know waste is a problem yet to be solved by the nuclear industry. It's also a problem to be solved, apparently, by the fracking business. At the Antenna Ranch in Crane County, Texas, the main water well is tainted with contaminants such as benzene, chloride, sulfate, and salt. All 150 head of cattle at the ranch were moved elsewhere. There are hundreds of active and inactive oil wells across 22,000 acres at Antenna, southwest of Midland. You know where that is. Some wells were drilled decades ago. Others that no longer produce are plugged with cement. This is according to E&E News by Politico. In recent years, a number of those inactive wells and others nearby have roared back to life. Geyser-like blowouts have erupted in West Texas. Underground pressures beneath the abandoned wells have swelled. The culprit, according to state regulators, the industry, and environmental groups, is water. I'm hoping it can get all worked out before it gets too bad, if it's not already past that stage, says the general manager of the nearby Groundwater Conservation District. Oil production in the Permian Basin of West Texas is churning out record-breaking amounts of briny, chemically laced, produced water. At least it's not directed. That climbs out of the ground during fracking operations. So much wastewater is coming up that in some pockets of the Permian Basin, operators are running out of places to put it. After injecting the wastewater deep underground, that resulted in earthquakes. Texas regulators have approved disposal wells in more shallow formations. But with record numbers of produced water being injected in that basin, the shallower injections have come with a host of new issues, including your well blowouts and your ground deformation. Quote, while the shift to shallow injection has reduced seismicity concerns, i.e., no more earthquakes in Texas, shallow injection alone is not a viable long-term solution, said the chair of the Railroad Commission of Texas. Oddly enough, that oversees oil and gas in Texas. It's the Oil and Gas Commission that regulates railroads, apparently. No! It has taken action, has the commission, to address concerns in recent years, but residents and water managers say they could see more tainted groundwater and drinking water in the desert if wastewater injection continues at its present pace. What the frack? And speaking of waste, the fashion industry's environmental strategy is making microplastics pollution worse, according to a new investigation reported by TheEcologist.org. More than 100 brands claim that recycled polyester from waste plastic bottles can help reduce pollution and other environmental problems. Adidas, H&M, Puma, and Patagonia have all switched almost all their polyester use from virgin, pardon the expression, to recycled for sustainability reasons. But new lab research published this week found that recycled polyester creates 55% more microplastic pollution particles during washing than virgin polyester, because the virgin polyester is less brittle. Hi, I'm Les Brittle. The particles were also found to be nearly 20% smaller, so more able to spread in the environment and cause harm. What are we going to do with our waste, ladies and gentlemen? And now, an action-packed edition of News of the Godly. The Archdiocese of New York has agreed to pay settlements to victims of sexual abuse. Cardinal Timothy Dolan told parishioners recently the Archdiocese would take further action to compensate the victims of the sexual abuse at the hands of the clergy members by selling real estate assets, such as the ground lease at 455 Madison Avenue to a hotel operator, Lotte New York Palace. The sale will generate $490 million. That'll provide for a $200 million disbursement to the church's Independent Reconciliation and Compensation Program. The remaining $200 million will go toward the repayment of loans the church took out for previous settlements under the Child Victims Act. The Archdiocese has been making the most of its Manhattan portfolio in recent years, according to Commercial Observer. In July, it finalized the sale of its former headquarters at 1011 First Avenue for $103 million. That's going to be converted into residential. That as follows, the sale of 1011 First Avenue could partially be contributed to the payment of the global settlement, according to an Archdiocese spokesperson. In January, it sold three adjacent Chelsea properties for $48 million. And in June last year, it offloaded a vacant lot in the East Village for between $58 and $68 million. And near the end of 2023, the Catholic Church reached a deal with a realty trust to sell 25,000 square feet of rights over St. Patrick's Cathedral, air rights, on Fifth Avenue for up to $164 million. So I guess the victims are going to... Meanwhile, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the next one, has been accused of mishandling an abuse claim. The Right Reverend Dame Sarah Mullally, Tom Mullally, 6 weeks away from taking up her new post, is alleged to have improperly dealt with an allegation of abuse made against a priest in London. She still serves there as the Bishop of London, according to the Telegraph. The complaint is now formally being dealt with by Church of England officials, which could still result in a disciplinary tribunal, penalties ranging from a rebuke to a lifetime bar from ministry. The incoming archbishop is accused of contravening the Clergy Discipline Measure Code by sending a confidential email about allegations regarding a priest from a complainant known as Survivor N. Sent the email directly to the priest concerned outside of the disciplinary process. Dame Sarah says the complainant was let down by the processes of the Church of England. Those nasty processes. In Australia, Newcastle and Ballarat are 1,100 kilometers apart, but they share a dark bond. Scores of suicide deaths linked to historical Catholic clergy abuse. The Child Abuse Royal Commission heard that it was there in the Newcastle, specifically in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where several pedophile brothers, not really brothers, but you know, brothers in the cloth, under the cloth, walked the halls of Marist Brothers Hamilton. The commission had data that showed 22% of all Marist Brothers in Australia were pedophiles. In the Hunter Valley, complaints were made against at least 20 of them. The commission also heard Ballarat was another epicenter of Catholic clerical abuse. The survivors group there has confirmed 50 suicide deaths linked to abuse by clergy. But it's not just priests. Two former nuns have been found guilty of physically abusing vulnerable youngsters at children homes in Scotland more than 40 years ago. Carol Beards and Eileen McElhinney caused several children unnecessary suffering. There's a necessary kind. And injury at two homes run by the Catholic Order, the Sisters of Nazareth. So, just to keep folks even, the sisters are doing it for themselves. News of the godly. Ladies and gentlemen, the news regarding the entertainment business, at least the media business, is filled with stories about the pending acquisition of Warner Brothers, the legendary movie studio and associated TV enterprise, by either Netflix, which has made an offer that's been accepted by the owners of Warner Brothers, or by Paramount, which is trying to compete and is apparently going to propose an offer directly to shareholders to go around the Netflix deal to finance its new cash offer. Paramount has gone to several Arabic nations, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. I think it's a cool billion they've contributed to the fund, the Saudis. Part of what is being described as a increasing attempt by that country and its official operations to get into the American media business. It may be happening already.
The Saudi Investment Fund thinks holiday time is for sharing beloved music with friends and family, even if it's not our holiday time. That's why future King Ben Salman has hand-selected Saudi Gold, the perfect musical background for your celebrations. Welcome to a time to dismember. You'll hear charming favorites from the recent past.
Try to dismember the kind of September.
From the distant past.
Give my regards to Broadway.
Dismember me
to Herald Square.
And from right about now.
You dismember when
I met
you,
girl, like I
dismember
the time. Dismember when
old ones died and new were born.
Dismember dismember
and be glad.
All of it in beautiful bone saw sound. All available in streaming or cut up in convenient pieces and sent straight to your home. But this is a limited time offer. Don't miss out on dismemories that will last a while. And don't forget, it's not solid gold, it's Saudi gold. Order now.
The butcher, the baker, the grocer, the clerk are secretly unhappy folks because the butcher, the baker, the grocer, the clerk get paid for what they do but no applause. They gladly bid their dreary jobs goodbye for anything theatrical, here's why. There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they've hung a star. Let's go.
The apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Atlanta Falcons running back Bijan Robinson has apologized for making an insensitive comment during a live interview on Thursday Night Football. He was interviewed on the Prime Video post-game show. The analyst Richard Sherman addressed Robinson's strong performance during a specific play. Robinson laughed and said, "Smear the queer. That's what we do. Smear the queer." Analyst and former NFL quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick broke in and corrected him by referring to the game as Kill the Carrier instead. The game, which has several names, according to NBC News, is most commonly a playground variation of football where the goal is to tackle the person carrying the ball before they score. Robinson later apologized for his comments on social media. "Hey, everyone, I want to apologize for the insensitive comment I made in the broadcast. It was a football game we used to play as a kid, but that's not an excuse. I recognize the mistake and make sure to do better in the future. It was not reflective of my beliefs, and I'm so sorry to those I offended." Seriously. Penn State Athletic Director Pat Kraft offered an apology a few days after a profanity-laced audio leaked of Kraft in a closed-door meeting with players on the team. In the audio posted on YouTube, he spoke disparagingly of other Big Ten teams, referenced the play of a member of a team, and more. Quote, "What I will tell you about that is I'm embarrassed," he said. "I apologize to anyone I may have offended with that audio that leaked. Personally, it's been challenging for me, but I'm very passionate about Penn State." Speaking of Pennsylvania, the case that Commonwealth Court was slated to hear this week
was already bound to be contentious, involving a challenge to the Commission on Human Relations application of anti-discrimination protections to transgender students in public schools. Moments after the attorney rose to make his case against the protections, the judge introduced a new question, whether the attorney, King Thomas W. King's firm, had made improper use of artificial intelligence in preparing its brief. Quote, "When I read the brief that was signed by three attorneys from your firm, I had a problem," he said. "I read what I believe to be artificial intelligence hallucinations. Many of the citations included quotes that either didn't exist, had been miscontextualized, or were later overruled." You quote a Supreme Court case for a quote that does not exist in that case, the judge said at one point. You cite another case for a proposition and a quote that does not exist, and that case is not even on point. "I'm unhappy. I feel as though you've put the court at a disadvantage," said King, the lawyer. "I would apologize for any artificial intelligence that might be contained in this brief. It would never be our intention to do so. We pride ourselves in being aware of the issue and not including such things in the brief, and so I apologize to the court to the extent that any of that is included." Dateline Tokyo, the head of the Unification Church, remember that? It's a Japan branch head, Tomohiro Tanaka, has stepped down, effective the same day that he expressed an apology over its massive donation solicitation practice at a press conference at the group's headquarters in Tokyo. Tanaka said he decided to resign after the church established a third-party committee in October to handle claims of compensation submitted by victims of the church's aggressive donation solicitation practices. His resignation comes after the High Court in Tokyo concluded hearings last month on a dissolution order against the organization. Its donation practices came to light following the assassination of former Prime Minister Abe 3 years ago by a person whose mother had made huge donations to the church. The group has solicited donations from over 1,500 people since around 1980, worth approximately $130 million. Sorry about that. He is. A national Canadian magazine has apologized to a photographer after drawing her images when she declined to license them. Jackie Dives was approached by McLean's magazine to use some of her photographs for an article that was being written about a drug supply in Vancouver. Dives went to ask the people in her photos whether they consented. One of the two people said no. "I went back to McLean's and I said, 'Hey, I'm sorry. I don't have permission from the people in the photographs to license these to you,' she said. Months afterwards, she received a text message from one of the people in the photos informing her that McLean's had drawn her photos and then published them. "It was so embarrassing," Dives said. "They had hired an illustrator to make images that were very, very similar." She complained to the magazine and that they represented a copyright violation. And McLean's acknowledged wrongdoing. McLean's published two illustrations, this is a quote, "that were based on photographs taken by Jackie Dives, used without her permission, and in violation of her copyright. The editors of McLean's regret using her photographs in this manner and apologize to Ms. Dives for the damages incurred." Hours after being called out by community members, Long Beach Transit apologized for running an ICE recruitment ad inside its buses. This is in Los Angeles County, Long Beach. And finally, the Victorian government in Australia has apologized for past injustices inflicted on Aboriginal people since the time of colonization through the, quote, "actions and inactions of the state and the colony that came before it," unquote. This is in The Guardian. A formal statement issued before the parliament, the premier of Victoria, Jacinta Allan, said the decisions made in that building over its history, quote, "have long denied the first peoples of this land their rights and their self-determination. We acknowledge the harm inflicted on generations of first peoples and mark the beginning of a new era one that embraces truth, honors justice, and creates space for a shared future, built in full view of the past, she said. She also said the colonization of Victoria was rapid and violent, and that Aboriginal people were stripped of their lands, waters, languages, culture, and children, not by accident, but by design. The apology arose from the treaty negotiation process, and Allen said many Victorians did not know about the extent of the harm done to Aboriginal people until the work of the truth-telling Yurok Justice Commission. We could use one of those. Now that we have a statewide treaty, she says, a negotiated agreement between equals, we can begin to say what should have been said long ago. To ensure that the wrongs of the past are never repeated, we say sorry to all the First Peoples in the gallery today and to every community across this state. We say sorry. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the side effects of the week.
Ingrezza can cause depression, suicidal thoughts, or actions in patients with Huntington's disease. Call your doctor if you become depressed, have sudden behavior or mood changes, or suicidal thoughts. Don't take Ingrezza if allergic. Serious side effects may include allergic reactions like sudden, potentially fatal swelling and hives, sleepiness, the most common side effect, and heart rhythm problems. Know how Ingrezza affects you before operating a car or dangerous machinery. Report fever, stiff muscles, or problems thinking, as these might be life-threatening. Shaking, stiffness, drooling, and trouble with moving or balance may occur.
I'm okay with all of that, except the drooling. Remember the metaverse? That was Mark Zuckerberg's next big thing. People are going to walk around wearing those glasses. It's lost Meta, the company, $77 billion as the company plans its budget for next year. It's diverting funds from the metaverse to AI. The next big thing. Sources tell Bloomberg the metaverse hasn't taken off the way Zuckerberg expected it to. He's cutting the virtual reality part of his company by as much as 30%. Ultimately, immersive headsets have not replaced smartphones and computers. Zuckerberg has talked less and less about the metaverse since 2021. His vision of people working and playing while immersed in a VR headset just hasn't caught on with the public. Damn that public. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. You don't even have to wear glasses to hear it. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desk, to the Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address of this program, the playlist of the music heard here on, and a lot of other stuff to read and enjoy and watch all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. And I'm on Substack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. song from the occupied Crescent City.